The government issues something like 1 million contract actions every year, and only a few are protested, about 2,500. But bid and award protests have a lot of impact and cost. Both the House and Senate are proposing protest reform in their versions of the 2017 National Defense Authorization Act. Helpful or doing more harm than good? For analysis, we turn to Stuart Turner, senior counsel at the law firm Arnold & Porter. Mr. Turner, great to have you on.
Thank you very much.
All right, so first of all, does this need reform in the opinion of a lawyer who handles bid protests for companies?
Well, I certainly think that most people in the industry would agree that the study provisions that both the House and Senate are calling for would be a valuable addition to the landscape. Both the House and Senate are requesting an analysis of the frequency of protests, the cost of protests, the effectiveness of protests, the timelines that protests tend to carry, and I think that that is a valuable exercise. The specific provisions that are set forth largely in the Senate bill, I think really need to get looked at in terms of their longer-term impact. While they clearly are identifying what could be a significant policy interest, I think that industry is somewhat cautious before embracing the full extent of these Senate revisions.
The Senate would impose losers' costs on the protester, kind of the English system of law here, and that seems really radical because protesters do have the legal right to protest government actions.
Well, there are numerous fee shifting provisions in the law that aren't necessarily seen as radical, but it would be a big change for the protest environment. Certainly, I think the strongest medicine that's being prescribed by the Senate committee is for incumbent contractors who protest. Specifically, the provision says that any large businesses that file a protest that doesn't result in a GAO decision sustaining the protest would have to pay GAO the costs, as you mentioned, the English rule. But there's another provision specifically directed at incumbent protesters incumbent contractors who protest. So an incumbent contractor who protests and is awarded a bridge contract, what's called a bridge contract, an interim contract intended to deliver services to the government during the pendency of a protest or during any other procurement delay, all profit and fee on a contract like that would be withheld by the government during the pendency of any protest filed by that incumbent bridge contract holder. And then if GAO does not issue a decision sustaining the protest, the contract is eventually awarded to another company, that other company would receive all of the withheld profit and fee from the bridge contract, which is clearly a very strong piece of medicine to give profit that one company has ostensibly earned on a contract to its competitor.
I guess the idea is to eliminate what they call serial protesters and also those people that get the extension of the contract while the protest is winding its way through GAO and possibly the courts. That could be a year in some cases.
There's nothing improper or illegal about bridge contracts in any way. It's a perfectly legitimate means by which the government can take care of gaps in services or gaps in supply that it needs. And there are any number of reasons why they may be needed. I mean, the agency itself faces lots of obstacles in the procurement calendar, and they can't always get a contract awarded when they want to, which means that certain things like protests would take the procurement calendar out past the expiration of the prior contract, and bridge contracts are a tool to do that.
Yeah, that happens a lot in telecommunications contracts over the years.
To be sure, and it happens a lot in the defense space. I think the difference between the House and the Senate is both the House and the Senate are calling for research, this independent entity to be appointed to do research on the protest process and to specifically examine incumbent protests and bridge contracts and come up with some real data about how frequent that is and what the impacts of that are. But I think the difference is that the Senate is comfortable enough that there is such a thing as a, quote, serial protester, as a Senate aide put it when speaking to the press about these provisions, that would file protests for the sole reason of obtaining bridge contracts. And I think that's a pretty strong finding for the Senate to make while simultaneously requesting research on the extent of that problem. So they seem to be simultaneously calling for a study of the extent and severity of the problem while also prescribing very strong medicine to fix it. That is a bit of a tension in the Senate approach, but that's possibly one of the purposes of it is to send a strong signal that this, you know, whatever form this reform ends up taking, that lawmakers are very interested in it, and they are not afraid to take a strong stand that they believe this problem exists.
We're speaking with Stuart Turner, senior counsel at the law firm Arnold and Porter. And what about the provision that would take away the GAO's province over protests of task orders under government-wide acquisition contracts? What is the distinction, do you feel, between those and a contract awarded in open market?
Well, this is the next chapter in a story that's been unfolding over the past 5 or 6 years. The issuance of a task order under a broader contract represents a contracting innovation that was originally instituted to create efficiency within the procurement system. So an agency could award an overall contract vehicle and then have that be specifically competed and then issue task orders with less formality, with a more streamlined process. And several years ago, Congress took the step of granting GAO, which had not had this jurisdiction before, specifically granting GAO the right to hear protests of task order contracts of over $10 million. And there's some other filigrees around it, but that was primarily the grant. And there were two jurisdictional grants, one for the civilian agencies, one for the defense agencies. And they were intended to sunset initially in 2010. Congress took action to remove the sunset provision and make the jurisdiction permanent regarding the civilian agencies. And now we have an interesting split between the House and Senate, which is that the House bill contains provisions to remove the sunset provision on the grant of jurisdiction over defense task and delivery order contracts. In other words, the House wants to make that jurisdiction permanent and permanently grant it to the GAO. The Senate wants to do essentially the opposite, which is to say that for defense contracts, if the Secretary of Defense has appointed an ombudsman for task and delivery orders, which the Department of Defense does have, and establishes a specific provision for hearing complaints about such contracts, then the GAO would have no jurisdiction over task and order delivery contracts, essentially removing jurisdiction over those from GAO over those awards. And GAO has said that the expansion of their jurisdiction into the task and delivery order space has added several hundred protests a year to their docket. Not an overwhelming number, but certainly a notable increase. And we, you know, as practitioners, we've been seeing them as well. So the dialing down of that seems to be addressed not at any particular policy measure like these quote-unquote serial protester provisions or these incumbent provisions are, but more at just turning down the level of protest activity generally.
Because if the motivation is to maintain the popularity of GWACs, you would think that the protests of task orders really in the grand scheme of things is almost like the pea under the mattress. I mean, do you think the Senate is just simply making too much of something that in the grand scheme of things is really not that big an issue?
Well, it's tough for me to opine about the many reasons why the Senate may be taking that action. I mean, you know, the role of this may emanate from a desire to empower Defense Department ombudsman offices, which have been a political football and not specified in terms of their authority within DOD for a long time. I mean, this could derive from that. And the utility of those government-wide vehicles is the subject of another longer debate, which could play into a number of things that don't necessarily connect to the protest issues specifically. So it's tough to say whether it's well-directed or not. It's clearly one aspect of it is designed to simply reduce the number of protests of Defense Department contracts generally, and that's consistent with the foci of the two research proposals, both of which are asking this independent entity to go and find out how much protests are costing DOD, you know, whether they're effective, et cetera, which speaks to a desire to make general conclusions about the efficacy of bid protests overall.
And do you hear from your clients? What is their thought about what's happening or what could potentially happen with these bills?
Well, I think it's wait and see. As I mentioned, you know, these protest reform and general procurement reform issues get foregrounded during the debates, but the bill itself may not manifest the strongest versions of these reforms. Clearly, everybody has their antenna up because, you know, it's unlikely that Congress is going to ignore this issue regardless of the form of the final bill, so it's on people's minds. I think that insofar as some of the cost provisions are specifically targeted at large contractors are looking at these and trying to get a sense of what these costs would entail, exactly how much they really move the needle in terms of thinking about protesting. And generally, you know, every contractor lives on both sides of this divide. You know, I mean, they are in some cases incumbents, and in some cases they want to be new entrants, and they want to be new awardees. So it's difficult to say that, you know, the government contracting community writ large sees these things as particularly aggressive at them. So they are more wait and see. They want to get a sense of what the landscape looks like and then adapts to it. But considering that these are more these are process issues that would affect them differently depending on their situation, I don't know that there's a general take for or against the restrictions.
Stuart Turner is senior counsel at the law firm Arnold & Porter. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks very much.
Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.